And, you know, I can't wait to watch Jordan Spieth to see what he does for an encore after his walk-off hole bunker shot at Harvard. Right. Right? Oh, that was Justin Thomas had the best line there. He said,
Jordan doing Jordan things?
That's a great line, right?
Great line.
I think if I'm Jordan Spieth, that's like my calling card.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
no doubt about it.
Jordan doing Jordan things.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I'm stealing that. You know? I'll give him credit. And yeah. I do. You know, but that was really good. Jordan doing Jordan things.
All right, the Four Play Boys are back, bitches. We got the Open Championship recap. Hell of a week.
What's up, bitches?
What's up, bitches? Coming in hot. We're excited. There's a lot to talk about. We kind of wait all year for these types of weekends, and we had a phenomenal one. Four Play presented by Barstool Sports. As always, we have on this week's show Colt Knost. Mm-hmm. We recorded that several weeks ago. We talk about being injured. He's been injured most of the year. What it's like coming back. Trent asks him if he found any new hobbies.
I was really hoping he was going to say he just jerks off all the time.
Yeah, that's what I would do. That's probably what he did.
Didn't tell us.
You have to listen to find out if he told us or not, but he didn't say necessarily that he does just jerk off all the time. Great dude. We had many people suggest that we have him on. We did. He's coming back now, getting ready to make a little bit of a run. Getting his health back, getting his game back. So we talked to him for about 20 or 30 minutes. We're obviously going to talk Open Championship. A little shout out to our guys at Grey Wolf Golf Club up in Canada, eh?
Canada, eh?
Who sent us a bunch of stuff several weeks ago. I had lost the note and their stuff and then came across the hats in my room. They are fire. I wore the red one last week.
They're a big hit at the office. Dave saw you wearing one, wanted one, and Nate Dogg, who is a big topic of conversation today, was wearing one today as well.
Yeah, he rocks the black one.
He does.
So thanks to those guys. So like 10 hats. So we might have to give some of those hats away because they're very cool. Mm-hmm. Shout out to those guys. Love Canada. Love golf clubs. Love hats. Also, our boy Rappaport. Mm-hmm. We got to plug him. He's got. He's at the Texas Theater in Dallas Saturday night, 8 p.m. Get your tickets. You can go to iamrappaporttour.com. Get that. Our coworker who got kind of, we got cucked on the internet today.
We did?
Did you see Worldstar took his video and watermarked it?
That's insane. Why would you do that?
I don't know. He works for us. Like, literally, we pay him.
Go see Rappaport. He's one of the funniest, anybody listening to this probably knows, he's one of the funniest dudes in the world.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. And he's like, I don't even know if he's trying to be funny.
No, that's just how he is. He's naturally one of those guys. He's a New York guy who can just talk and talk and talk, and it's hilarious. When I went home, one of the more impressive things, other than my family being in love with Riggs.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. Shout out to the Ryans.
Was my brother being in awe when I was like, yeah, Michael Rapport's my coworker, technically. He was like, that's the coolest fucking thing.
It is the coolest fucking thing.
It is the coolest fucking thing in the world.
He's the man. He is an animal. So go see him if you haven't. If you're in that area, go get your tickets. We're going to talk Open Championship. First, we do have to talk about how phenomenal the Dollar Shave Club is. Many people notice that I have a very well-trimmed beard these days. Kind of accentuates my jawline. Doesn't get that way easily. New York, you pretty much never want to leave your apartment.
Never.
You kind of just want to be there. You want things to arrive. That's how Dollar Shave Club works. You sign up. They bring it right to you. You don't have to schlep your ass to the store. So you can get yourself a great shave at a great price, very conveniently, delivered right to you. It's an awesome, basically a life hack. It's a no-brainer choice. You don't have to basically leave ever for any reason. They'll bring it right to you. You don't have to go buy a cheap disposable razor that'll give you a cheap shave. You don't have to spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech that you do not need. And when I use my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor, with their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving me a very smooth shave. Like I said, many people are talking about it. You can't miss it. You can't avoid it. Their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave. Helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps. You too can make a smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors just are just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5. Not sure if you're all math people, that you're pretty crazy if you don't take advantage of that. In your first month's box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees, no commitments. Cancel anytime you would like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/4. That's dollarshaveclub.com/FORE. Go get your razors.
Good job on that read, buddy. People were mean to me on the internet last week for my Dollar Shave Club read.
What'd they say?
They said I didn't read it very well, and they were probably right, but they were mean to me.
Interesting. I felt like you read it. Oh, I don't know if this is going to come off. Like you read it like you always read it.
That's, if I read those ads like that one every single time, we have a problem. I did go back and listen to it, and it was shaky.
It was a little shaky? Maybe you were just nervous.
Why would I be nervous, though?
I don't know.
I think I needed to read it over one more time before I did it, but people who were mean to me on the internet, you were right. You're very rarely
right. There's also a lot of, it's kind of like alliteration and a little tongue twister, like Dollar Shave Club, you know, you can kind of get slipped up a little
bit. I don't
know
if this is going to make much sense, but there are some times when I get too much saliva in my mouth, and it makes it hard to say things.
I don't think people are going to be stunned by that.
I don't think they are either.
Yeah.
Because I say sometimes are hard to come out because they're fighting through just waves of saliva in my mouth.
Let's see how you do on talking Open Championship.
Okay. Now I'm going to be thinking about it. I'm self-conscious.
So
Sunshine's laughing at me. He's probably one of the people on the internet with a burner account like, your read sucks.
Imagine if Sunshine was eggs, just, if he was just a Twitter troll.
Franny Lyden, like when old Hank was doing that to Dave.
I could see that. Real quiet, around the office. Just bashes us.
He just secretly hates us, so he puts on a fake Twitter account and just comes at us.
Yeah, if he's just out there tweeting like, oh, Sunshine's the only saving grace on this show. The other two guys suck.
Could be. You never know.
Jordan Spieth. In what can only be described as a wild Sunday.
Yes.
Open Championship.
Yeah, it wasn't wild until we got to about the 13th hole. The first 12 holes were pretty, I don't want to say uneventful because it wasn't. It looked like he had it in the bag starting with the day. He was three shots over Matt Kuchar.
Yep.
So I even tweeted, this is going to be a cruise control day. And there's going to be nothing to it. Spieth is going to win his third major.
He never wins like that, though.
No, he doesn't.
He
but
always makes it interesting for whatever reason. He even said it afterwards. He's like, I would love to win one boring fucking time.
Well, he won his Masters win a couple years ago.
Well, not even that, though. He still had to make putts down the stretch. Yeah, he made a big putt on 16 when Rose was kind of giving him a hard time.
A little bit. But I felt it in my bones that it was going to be a boring Sunday. I hear what you're saying. It never is that way. And it wasn't. It was the most electric Sunday round I think I've ever seen. I'm 10 to hyperbole because what is that? The things that happen recently? Recency bias is what I'm looking for.
Oh, yes, recency
bias. That is my Dollar Shave Club read. And then.
Now, that was just kind of a mental thing. You got there.
I did.
Way to go, pal.
Thank you. But then once you get to the 13th hole, it becomes the most interesting golf tournament I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was one of those I kept saying in my head, every time Spieth made a bogey, I kept saying in my head, he's not going to shoot over par today. Okay. I just kept thinking, okay, he was three over through whatever, four holes, and I kept thinking, all right, Jordan Spieth doesn't come out with a three-stroke lead and shoot over par to lose a major championship. I just didn't think that was going to happen. After all the Masters stuff, how much that's been in his head, I just thought he has delivered before. He's won majors before being very clutch down the stretch. He's won other tournaments before being very clutch down the stretch. He's going to be known at the end of his time as a guy that's very clutch down the stretch. There's no way he finishes over par. And then with his debacle at 13, I was like, well, he's going to make a fucking double here. He might be going back to the tee. He's going to be five over, and this thing, he's going to be down two or three strokes, this thing's over. And then, I mean, that had to be, all things considered, the most kind of crazy clutch bogey ever.
Yeah. To think that he came away with all that with a bogey.
With a bogey.
A bogey.
All of that. All the delay, the bullshit, the ruling. Where can he go? Is he going to have to go back to the tee? If he makes double or triple here, now he's losing by multiple strokes after leading for 4 days straight, 3.5 days straight. And then he gets out of there with just a bogey. And you're thinking, well, okay, like that's. And he said that, you know, Greller had said to him at that point, that's a huge momentum shift that we got out of there with just a bogey.
Yeah, because you just know. Kuchar's sitting, because when he's literally sitting or taking a knee on the fairway on 13, waiting for Spieth to do something, anything. We've gone to like three commercial breaks by this point. You got to think Kuchar's like, all right, I can win this thing. Jordan Spieth is completely rattled.
Yep.
He's going to fall apart here down the stretch, and I'm going to win this thing. And it goes the complete other way. It's funny that you say, heading into this, he's not going to finish above par. Part of his legacy is going to make – he makes clutch putts. He does this. He does that. After he hits that errant tee shot on 13, everyone on Twitter is saying now his legacy is going to be number 12 at the Masters. It's going to be number 13 at Royal Birkdale. His legacy could have shifted either way. In the world that we live in now, things work that quickly where it went from we think he's going to be a choke artist for the rest of his career despite having two majors already to he is now – where we want Jordan Spieth to be and where we thought he was going to be after 2014.
Look, don't get me wrong. When the whole 13th hole was going down, I was saying in my head, like, well, maybe he is going to finish over par and blow this fucking tournament. But when he made that bogey, you just thought, okay, at least, you know, he's going to come in, he's gonna birdie one or two of the par fives. It's going to be close. He's down by, what was he, down by one stroke then after 13?
Yeah.
So I started, you know, you kind of got that vibe like, okay, it's not over yet. And then when he hit it tight, it was like, here we go. And then when he fucking eagled, it was like.
Him coming back to the par three on 14 and almost acing it. Literally, he almost aced it.
Imagine what that would have been like. That would have just gone in.
I don't even know what I would have reacted like. But then just to come back and hit that shot, and then again, like you said, he went eagle, birdie, birdie. The eagle putt was from like 50 feet away.
Right. And that birdie on 14, it felt like it came out of nowhere. Because it was negative, negative, negative. Of delay, pace of play, everyone's chirping. Wow, okay, he made a bogey, that's not that bad. And then he hits, almost holes it.
Almost.
And you're like, what am I watching right now? Like, what world are we in? This is insanity.
And you and I went on the radio today, talked to Dave a little bit about the delay. Dave was making it seem like it was Jordan Spieth's fault that it was taking so long. I don't think Jordan really had any of that sort of control in that situation. Obviously, he was checking with the rules officials what's going on, but it took about as much time as it needed to take to get the right ruling. I don't think Spieth was causing any sort of delay on purpose.
No, and I mean, if somehow he finagled it to where he was, it's a genius move.
Certainly.
Because he needed a timeout.
I mean, he did.
Badly. And you know, Cooch is the unfortunate recipient of kind of getting screwed by that delay, getting cold, whatever. It's not like he collapsed or anything. I mean, he played fine. Yeah. But still, that sucks to sit there for 25 minutes. You're not hitting a shot. You've got the other guy on the ropes. Mm-hmm. You're kind of bagging him, punching him, jabbing him, and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets a 25-minute timeout, comes back, makes a heroic bogey, goes birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie.
If there's one guy who is not going to say he's mad about something, it's probably Matt Kuchar.
Probably
he's
going to
smile. He was smiling through the entire thing. Whether or not that's what he actually feels inside, I feel like he might have a couple of demons in there because anybody who smiles all the time.
Something going on.
Is there something going on? But Matt Kuchar took it all in stride. His family came out to see him. They were hoping to see him win his first major. That did not happen because Jordan Spieth happened.
Who were you pulling for down the stretch?
Oh, God. I saw you had a couple tweets about this.
Yeah, I didn't know. I couldn't figure it out.
Did you ever figure it out?
Yeah. Once Spieth lost the lead, I wanted it to be Spieth. Because it was just, I knew it would be such a cooler story. If Cooch would have won at that point, it would have, in my opinion, been known as the Open that Spieth threw away.
Yeah.
Much like Danny Willett's is known as the Masters, where Spieth collapsed.
Definitely.
It would have not been really, you know, not that this is fair to Cooch at all, but I just feel like it would have gotten way more of the rap as like, oh, that was where Spieth furthered his legacy as the choke artist. So I kind of wanted it to be Spieth, and I knew that him coming back would be this heroic story, and it is. And the way that he did it was crazy.
What you just said is why I was rooting for Spieth. I didn't want it to become the Jordan Spieth is a choke artist show. One, because I just don't want to talk about that because I'm not sure that it's definitely not true. Now we know that.
Right.
And also, I just didn't want him to be that guy if it was true. Like, I want Jordan Spieth to be the next guy who's going to take this thing to the next level and do things that we have maybe seen before, but I want to see those types of things again. So I didn't want Jordan Spieth to become the choke artist guy. One, because I didn't want to talk about it, and two, because I didn't want it to actually be true.
Yes, and you know, to play devil's advocate, the reason you don't want to say you're pulling for Spieth too much, because that means then you have to be pulling against Cooch, because Cooch, I mean, Cooch, he's almost 40 now,
mm-hmm.
and he's one of those guys that you know, you feel like this is one of, if you know, his last chances to get a major. He's been on a bunch of the President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams with all the high fives as Tiger's teammate and all of that. He's always known as one of the funnier guys. He's always one of the better guys in the locker room, chirping, giving the other guys shit, ribbing them, all that. So you want that kind of guy to, okay, this is his shot. Let's see him get a major. So that's why it was such a hard thing to pull for. And then we started getting hammered today a little bit by Dave, and Big Cat is like, oh, this is good for golf. The this is good for golf stuff. But it was. If it's true. It really was.
If there hadn't been a near collapse for Spieth and they had just played a pretty normal round of golf and Kuchar prevails, that's I would have been rooting for that.
Yeah.
Because you get Kuch to break through finally, and Spieth is he's fucking 23. He's going to be 24 in like 3 days. He's going to have a million more opportunities to win this tournament. But it just so happened that he hits an errant tee shot on 13. All hell breaks loose, and the conversation becomes, is Spieth a choke artist? Is he not? He is not.
Yeah, and I'm always a big guy. You know, I root for the bigger impact on, like, on historical context. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the historical context of the game, the greats, where people end up falling at the end of their career, you know, Spieth is going to have a significantly bigger impact than Matt Kuchar. And therefore, every time he wins, you feel like you're, you know, it's like watching one of the Bulls wins in the 90s or whatever. It's or one of the Patriots, you know, heroic wins now during their run, where it's like you'll be able to tell, you know, people forever about watching Spieth in his prime win majors, and that was one of those days.
Yeah, and he's
so
now,
that's kind of what I root for, is like I always want to be part of the history.
Yeah, you start hearing that he's the youngest American to ever win the Open Championship. He's the him and Jack are the only guys who have won the three legs of the Grand Slam before they're 24. Stuff like that is very interesting and very fun to root for. You're right. Matt Kuchar is not going to have that sort of impact on the game of golf.
We had Rory kind of pull what's becoming a Rory staple. And let's not downplay Rory. I mean, the guy's got four majors, and he's won a couple of them by, like, 8 shots.
Yep.
So Rory has his own thing going on where he's going to be part of the greats. But his trend as of late has been he just kind of sneaky backdoor top 10s, top 5s, majors. He did it again. What did he finish, T4 or something like that?
T4.
T4, Rory with, you know, a 3-under or something like that on Sunday. After kind of collapsing on Saturday when it looked like he was making a little bit of a run.
He was, and then he also, on Thursday, he started through 6 holes. He was +5. So yep. It was like, all right, we're done with Rory. We're just not going to be Rory's weekend.
After he had, you know, he's missed a couple cuts, and he's been getting shit on in the media for just not being, you know, what we thought he would be this year, and starts 5 over through 6. Very easy to collapse and just mail it in at that point, say, fuck it, I'm going to go to the Bahamas or something for a couple days. Nope, battles back. Somehow backdoors a top 5. You know, he'll figure it out. He always does. Obviously the concerning thing about him is his putting.
Yes.
That's like the big, you know, his swing, the way he hits the ball, the way he drives the ball. I think everybody gives him the massive advantage over Spieth, but when you've got that guy that just makes those putts,
I mean,
that's just, people take that all the time, you know, drive for show, putt for dough. It's one of those classic cliches, but it's fucking true. And it's very concerning about Rory, in my opinion.
A couple things on Rory. One, I actively root for Rory. Spieth, I'm like you. I like the historic part of the game where Spieth has the chance to really be something historically. Rory, too. But I actively root for Rory. I was tweeting about Rory and Spieth on Saturday, being like, man, I hope Rory makes a run here. I hope Rory makes a run. People were like, if there was a Spieth-Rory showdown, who would you root for? I'm rooting for Rory 100 times out of 100.
I know that's
going to piss off people who are like, you got to root for the American. No, I don't care. I don't care about that unless it's Ryder Cup stuff. If it's just those two straight up, I'm Rory every single day of the week.
What if Rory's playing Spieth in the Ryder Cup in singles?
Spieth, I guess. Spieth.
Wow, the fact that you hesitated.
I have a big crush on Rory. Always have. And the second thing about him, there was a point on Sunday where if he had made a little bit of a run, since the leaders were backsliding a bit, where if he could have put up a number, he could have, like, maybe potentially won or at least gotten to a playoff, which would have been something.
Yeah, we had Lee, who's in the clubhouse at 6-under, like 4 hours before the leaders get to the back nine, and all of a sudden you start looking at the numbers when these guys were, eight, I think they're at, what, 8-7?
Yeah.
And you're starting to think, this guy's got a fucking chance. He'd be halfway across the Atlantic on his way back home. And people would be like, hey, buddy, like you're in a playoff.
He shot the quietest 63 on Sunday of all time.
Of all time.
Because he was in at 6 under, and there was a chance that he was going to get into a playoff or maybe win if they really imploded. I thought Rory, he had a chance to do that too, and it just didn't happen. Rory's the most frustrating person to watch right now because he teases you with these little bit of runs, and then he fucking falls off.
Well, Rory, is Rory the biggest name in golf right now?
Biggest in terms of what? Just
the biggest draw. Can you have a bigger draw than Rory? I mean, Tiger's out of it, so we can't factor in Tiger. Is Phil too old to be that, or is Phil still that big of a draw?
No, it's not Phil.
Yeah.
When Rory is good, he is the most exciting player by far.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's the most captivating guy. But I like Spieth more than I like Rory.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't.
I mean, I love both of them.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. But I would put Spieth is ahead for me. I wrote a really long blog about it today, but I
read it. It was very good.
I just think that he has I love the skills that he has. I just think are the perfect combination to continuously for 25 years on tour contend and win majors at like a gradual but consistent rate. I don't think he's going to go on these Tiger like tears where he wins like 8 tournaments in a year.
Yeah.
Or very often. I mean, you might have little flashes, but I think every 2 years or so he's going to like sprinkle in a major and you're going to start to add him up and be like, holy fuck, Spieth has won 45 events and he's won 9 majors. Jesus Christ, he's like a top 5 player.
The difference for me, and you're right about all of that, is one, Rory will get white hot and he'll win a bunch of tournaments, and his personality, his swagger is just different. When he's winning it, you can feel it.
His walk. We've talked about his walk.
He walks like he's got a fucking big-ass hammer right between his legs.
Yeah, he walks like he's got the biggest dick I've ever seen.
Spieth is always going to be kind of, not humble, but he's like, I expected to be here. I worked for this. I did this. I did that, all the right things. Rory, to me, when he's winning and when he's on a run, he is just so much swagger. And you can feel it. You can see it. That's the difference for me, and that's why I like Rory more than I like Spieth.
I prefer the way that Spieth discusses how things unfold in his mental state more than I like the way that Rory does it. Like Spieth talking about how the thoughts of the meltdown seeped into his head on 13.
Yeah.
This meltdown from Augusta last year. Like the way that he very honestly and I think very intelligently and cautiously like explains how he was thinking through there.
What do you mean by cautiously?
I think he really takes his time when he's talking to the media.
Okay.
And very like he wants to articulate it the right way, but also very honestly and genuinely. And he when he tells the story about how he said to Greller after he made the quad at 12 last year at the Masters, where he said, like, hey, I think we're collapsing. that type of stuff is great, where he's just kind of very open with what other people try to hide or other people try to, like, and not that Rory's also very honest. I just love the way that Spieth talks about it.
I think the difference between their relationship to the media is Spieth is very engaged and happy to talk to the media, where Rory just couldn't care less. But he gives good answers. That's one of the things I like about him the most is he's thoughtful and honest, and he'll say things that people maybe think is controversial. But I think if you cut out the media part of Rory, he would just be like, that's fine. I don't want to talk to these people at all.
Yeah, and I think Spieth likes it.
Yeah, I think so too.
He's got they're very different the way they talk to the media, but he's almost got a feeling towards the media that Phil has, where he knows he can like use them.
It's actually interesting between these two, where I think the things that Rory says to the media is things that Spieth would never ever say because they are controversial.
Right.
But I also think it goes the other way, where Rory would never get as deep into the technical and emotional side of it the way that Spieth does.
Yeah,
I think they're very different.
That's
what
I love. And Spieth's emotion comes out a lot on the course, the way he talks to his ball, the way that he kind of reacts, the way that he hit that. When he felt like he kind of mishit that the iron on 13, which was his third shot, and he put his hands over his head, like he had just fucking hit it out of bounds lost the tournament.
That was the drive that he hit. Yeah,
yeah, and yes, it was the drive, and he did it again on his approach.
Yep,
when he kind of like hit it, and then he gave a little like I can't do it right now.
Yeah,
kind of reaction. I love those.
Yes, I think a lot of people like those.
I love those. It's just very. That's just how that's how I feel. Like, I'm like, God damn it. Like, what's going on?
And they would never hear whether it's true or not, you would never hear people say, oh, I don't think Spieth cares or I think he's lazy. As Rory has, unfair or fair, gotten those things put on him, you would never hear about that about Spieth.
Yeah, he gets a little bit of like he's disinterested sometimes.
Which I Steve Elkington, our friend of the program, went after him a little bit and got dunked on by Rory, but I mean, he's not the first one to bring that up. We talked about it when that happened. You would never hear people say, I think Spieth is disinterested.
And Brandel brought it up on last week's show where he was like, look, there's just, it's human nature that these guys, and Brandel loves the house on the beach thing, when guys get, you know, a certain amount of money, it seeps a little bit of that hunger out of them.
That's
no matter
human
what.
Nature.
That's just human nature.
Complacency is human nature, and that's what he said was the biggest difference with Tiger.
Right.
Was that, he just didn't have that.
Exactly, and that's what he was saying, that, you know, these generational greats that we're going to get sprinkled in every now and then, you very rarely get one that is not, you know, turned a little bit more complacent by that type of success. And all of the money in the game now, there are going to be guys that are, you know, taking a couple extra trips or not putting in as many hours on the range, because in order to, you know, accumulate this massive wealth that will carry on your family for generations and put you in a great spot,
yeah,
you don't have to go out there and grind and win a bunch of majors, you know, to the same degree. So there's always that factor, and I think Spieth comes off more like the kind of guy that won't be affected by that. Then again, he's also 23, and Rory's 28. We'll see where Spieth's at in 5 years.
I cannot believe Spieth is only 23.
I couldn't believe that either. He is going to be 24 in a couple days, but still.
But even if we were like 24, that's still, I said in my blog, but I feel like he's been around forever.
That's damn young. We had Brandon Grace with maybe the most anticlimactic 62, you know, pretty monumental record that went down, the 63. There's been 40 something of them in major championship history. We've had all the lip outs with which they kept playing on the coverage. Phil, Tiger, lipping out, trying to break 63. Nobody could do it. Brandon Grace just comes out and very fucking casually, before anybody else tees off on Saturday, shoots a 62.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Sucked.
I was tweeting about it, and I was like making fun of Johnny Miller because that's what everybody does on Twitter.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, in your face, blah, blah, blah. But then I really started to think about it. 62 has been so elusive for so long, and for it to go down like that did not feel right.
And people were coming at me like, oh, why? What do you hate Brandon Grace? I like Brandon Grace. Like him a lot. But I would rather see the record go down in some iconic round, some iconic moment. When Johnny Miller shot the first one, you know, it was a 63 in the U.S. Open at Oakmont to win on Sunday in unbelievable fashion. I think that was the first one. But anyways, it was 63, and it's the one that he talks about all the time, so it feels like it was the first and only one. That was, you know, you want that 62 to come that way, or you wanted to even,
I really wanted Phil to get it at Troon last year with,
yes,
that lip out. That really felt
awesome.
That felt like the moment where, like, we're going to finally see 62.
Or as Tiger at Southern Hills in 2007. You wanted it to be something like that, and you didn't want it to be Brandon fucking Grace, who ends up finishing, you know, whatever. Who knows what he did he finish? Top 10, top 15?
I'll look, but
like,
yeah.
Very unceremonious. That was our point. That was very disappointing to see the record fall like that. It wasn't disappointing to see Brandon Grace play great golf that goes down in the record books. It was to see the record go down that has stood up in such amazing, dramatic fashion with these crazy lip outs and the golf gods guarding the hole,
right,
when the 62 comes into play, and then just to see it go down like that was brutal.
He finished T6, and I completely agree with you, and I think anyone who disagrees with you and is like, I'm just glad it happened, I'm happy. Here's the thing. Being happy for Brandon Grace and saying, I wish it had happened in a different fashion, you can have both of those thoughts.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we feel.
Yes.
Like, good for Brandon Grace, 62, man. And Johnny Miller said it's playing very, very easy. It was very Johnny Miller reaction.
Oh, he had some unbelievable quotes.
It's very Johnny Miller how he reacted to it, but it's what you're saying. I wanted it to happen at a moment that mattered, not when it was, you know, nobody had teed off and, oh, you wake up in the morning, holy shit, Brandon Grace shot a 62.
Yes.
That's not how you want that.
No.
But congratulations to Brandon Grace, but it's, you know, I think people understand where we're coming from.
Yeah, somebody had a great tweet where they were like, pretty good for the Southport Open, Johnny Miller, probably.
Yes.
It was a fucking great quote.
Yep. And Johnny Miller, he did not disappoint. I know you like him, and I do not like
him. Huge Johnny Miller guy.
But, again, you know what he's going to say. He's going to say, oh, it's a great record, but it was set up very, very easy. He's not wrong. But
to cover the course real quick, I thought the course held up great. I thought, you know, it's links. It's Open Championship. It's going to be dependent on the weather. That's the nature of the event, always has been, always will be. It was brutally tough to start the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I was still up. My brother and his wife flew into town. They didn't get in until like 1 o'clock on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. So I was already up anyways. So I was like, oh, I'll watch the first couple tee shots at like 1:35. Marco Mira, out of bounds. You know, three of the first guys in the group, or I think three balls out of the first three groups, out of bounds on the first hole.
Yep.
People were making triples, quads all over the place. I was like, this is great. Played even harder on Friday. And then you had a really easy day Saturday, and guys went low. And then Sunday, it held up well yesterday.
Yeah, it was playing so easy on Saturday that Brandon Gray shot a 62, and we're like, all right, that's going to last about an hour because Dustin Johnson's about to finish up.
Yeah.
And he's going to get one, too.
He ended up posting a 64. But like I said, I like that the course is going to play way different day to day because that's just the nature of the championship. Had you not had that Friday, you might have seen some record breaking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I got my fix of carnage. I got my fix of really good rounds with
all kinds
of birdies.
It was like a perfect mix of both.
Great little mix, and then you got the drama at the end. So.
I gotta tell you, we root for carnage. You and I, we've talked about this before, especially when around U.S. Open time. But when I was sitting in my apartment watching Saturday morning, drinking coffee, watching people go low, that's a fun time.
That's great.
A really fun time.
I couldn't agree more. It's really nice. It was great to see, especially after all the carnage from the day before.
Yep.
So we're not these crazy, pessimistic psychopaths. We like to see a little bit of both, and we got our mix.
Yeah, I think I often... act like I want to be pessimistic and see carnage, but then I'm just like a happy golden retriever when people are going low. So it's like it goes both ways.
Yeah, it is. We're kind of dumb in that regard. There was only one guy that got to double digits under par, even with that Saturday round. So Royal Birkdale, and the people were praising the course. It's great. It's got that first 14 holes that are grueling, and then you get some birdie opportunities coming home. So it was great. We had Ian Poulter hovering near the lead the first couple days. I didn't even really respond to the tweets because there's no chance Ian Poulter's going to win the tournament. Zero.
I always freak out early. I do respond to them, and I'm like, you guys are fucking ruining my day with these tweets. But then everyone always comes. My followers are so sweet and so nice for the most part when they say, this is just setting us up for a weekend collapse. I would rather have him in contention and then watch him fall as the days go by, and they're always right.
We kind of said that about the players where we were like, no, this is fine. He's going to collapse, and like he kind of did, but also finished second. I do. One of my new favorite things is that whenever Poulter starts to get a ton of coverage, they always bring up how he has a tendency to shank shots, iron shots under pressure.
Yes. Yes.
Where they go back to how he did it at the Players. And then I think it was like the Honda Classic a couple of years ago where he teed off with the lead and then shanked one on like the eighth hole, like out of play and made a triple. So I love that that's become a thing. Bryson DeChambeau, shout out to him, 13 over, missed the cut.
Yep. After winning the John Deere Classic, he really was not ready for a Royal Birkdale.
I don't really know emotionally where I stand on him. I've kind of gone back and forth. We'll have to think about that a little bit more, but 13 over, I don't hate that at all. Grayson Murray won the Barbasol Championship.
The foreplay anti-curse, because
the reverse curse.
Well, I shouldn't call it the foreplay reverse curse on this one, at least. I don't know your feelings on Grayson Murray, but I have been strongly against him. I think he's a stupid person. I think his Twitter game is awful, and I just do not like the guy. He seems like a genuinely off-putting person.
Yeah, there's really nothing very appealing about him on the Twitter at all. That's basically all I know him from, is Twitter.
Which is not good.
And I would know him from this, except he wins the one tournament where every player in the world is playing in the major and not the Barbasol Championship here. So, but the reverse curse, I mean, it's strong.
It's 2 weeks in a row where guys that I just bury on the Twitter and on the blogs, they just win and make me shut up. Like, I can't say anything. You're right. Barbasol, not exactly a stacked field, but he still won on the PGA Tour. You can't take that away from him.
No, you really can't. And, I mean, those guys that he beats out there are really good players. And he's been playing actually really well the last couple months. So it's, you know, I'm not going to say that we praise everyone on this show. We don't. But there are really only a handful or maybe 10 or so guys that we've actually kind of gone after, justified in my opinion, and been like, these guys suck, we don't like these guys, and like all of them have come out and won.
They're having a great year
or made millions of dollars in the Players Championship by and playing for second,
right,
or whatever.
We can shit on Poulter, and he hasn't won, but he got second of the Players.
He's like totally turned around his career ever since we started shitting on him.
We shit him on this podcast when he lost his tour card, and he got his tour card back.
Yes,
on a little
the gods like reverse cursed it right there. The one that's, you know, kind of that people always point to that didn't pan out was the Tiger reverse curse attempt where he got a DUI the next day. So We'll have to figure out the reverse curse situation. Not really sure where we're at, but not going in a great direction. Next up, we have the Colt Knost interview. Everybody enjoy this.
This interview with Colt Knost is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Think of the million things you do every day to keep your family safe. Well, a SimpliSafe home security system is another fantastic way to keep them safe. It's super easy, too. Each SimpliSafe system is a security arsenal expertly engineered to protect your home. You can set up the system yourself in under an hour. There's no drilling or hardwiring required, and you save hundreds on installation fees. SimpliSafe has a super fast wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. 24/7 alarm monitoring is just $14.99 a month. No hidden fees, no annoying gotchas. That's it. No long-term contracts either. SimpliSafe will never lock you in like the other alarm companies do. Feel free to cancel at any time. You also get a 60-day risk-free trial to try the system out your home and see if you like it. I can't recommend SimpliSafe enough to protect your family. Right now, go to simplisafe.com/barstool. That's B-A-R-S. T-O-O-L. If you order today, you'll get an extra 10% off, plus a free keychain remote and free shipping. Go now to simplisafe.com/barstool.
Colt, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is Riggs. I'm here with my guy, Trent.
Hey, Colt, how's it going, man?
Good, Trent. How are you?
Fantastic.
Hey, thanks a lot for hopping on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
So you, we'll start with, you know, you hurt your wrist. You had surgery. You've been out pretty much the whole year. What's going on with your body? Kind of where are you at with all that?
Yeah, everything's going good. You know, I kind of played through the pain all last year just because I was playing so well. And then this year was kind of rough, and things were starting to get pretty bad as far as, like, swing speed and the pain and everything. So finally decided to have it looked at, and they went in and cleaned it up and had 14 weeks off, no balls or anything. And started hitting balls a couple months ago, and then got cleared to start playing a few weeks ago, and it's coming along nicely.
So during that time off, I mean, we're kind of weekend golfers. I sit there all week, whether it's in my apartment or at work, kind of thinking about my swing, what I could do, but I can't actually swing anything. Were you just like thinking about your action nonstop?
I was just so bored. It was incredible. I mean, I had a cast on my hands. So I couldn't do anything, but it was just, I mean, I would go out to the golf course and just sit and talk to people and putt one-handed, but it was awful.
Yeah, so you know, were you able to kind of, I don't know, restart a little bit or kind of start fresh, I feel like, when you come back from something like that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been playing out professionally for 10 years, and, you know, I'm a guy that plays a lot, and I haven't really had much of a break during that time, and, you know, it kind of got me hungry again and ready to go again. I'm getting the itch really bad right now that I want to get out there and compete, but it sucked that I was out for that long, but it was kind of a nice little break and kind of got my motivation back, and I'm ready to get back out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're playing every week, sometimes I feel like it can be a little repetitive and whatnot. You got to be just hungry as shit right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unreal. Like, I mean, I tell guys, even like during weeks off when I'm home, I love going out, getting in the cart, drinking beer and playing golf. Like, that's not work to me. That's fun.
So do we.
And so, yeah, exactly. So if during that time off, it was just brutal, because I mean, I'm used to playing almost every day, and now that I'm finally back playing again, it's so fun. Like, I love getting out there and gambling and playing with the guys, and you know, I'm ready to get back out on tour.
So let's get into a little bit of, you know, while you took some time off, you hopped in with doing a little analyst gig for Golf Channel. We're kind of get into gambling and all that, but, you know, Jim Bones McKay pretty notoriously last week announced that he's getting into it. First of all, what was that kind of like hopping on the other side for a little bit?
It was cool. You know, I mean, it's something they've talked to me about for a while now, just kind of just because of my personality and stuff, I guess. And once I was hurt, you know, I figured I would do it just see how it was. And it's something like I think I could see myself doing once I'm done playing. I'm not near ready to be done playing yet, but it was cool. Like, I kind of want to be more, if I do it, would rather be like out on the golf course and stuff like that than in studio. But it was a cool experience, and you know, I got a lot of positive feedback from it, which was nice. I was a little nervous the first day, but then kind of loosened up as the week went on.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you've talked a little bit about kind of gambling and playing with Phil and all that, so I'm sure you know Bones a little bit. How do you think he's going to do out there?
Yeah, I know Bones very well. We play out at the same golf course here in Scottsdale at Wishbrock. And, you know, he's going to be great. He's going to bring such a different side to it. I mean, he's the guy that's been in the ropes, you know, with Phil, one of the greatest ever. And He's been in the middle of it with Ryder Cup, President's Cup, major championships, and he's going to bring a whole different view, and it's going to be awesome. He's, you know, he's a very well-spoken guy as well, and he'll do great.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about it last week, and he's almost been kind of the highest level analyst you could have for the last, you know, whatever, 25 or 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, you watch him on when they're playing on TV. I mean, he's very vocal, and he's in there a lot with Phil, and they discuss things, and he's going to be great, and I know he's very excited about it.
So I'm a huge gambler. I know you've talked about it a little bit. You know, you kind of talked about what it takes to successfully gamble against Phil. What's the secret out there if you're out there with Phil to kind of come out on top?
Wow, he's tough. I mean, on the golf course, he's tough. Now, playing cards and other things, that's a different story. But golf's tough. He's a great trash talker, as am I, but he always has, you know, the majors and all the wins to kind of throw at me, which is unfair. But, you know, he's great. He's a guy I always looked up to growing up, and to be able to get out there and compete and gamble against him has just helped me in my career so much. I mean, I don't hold much back with him, and he doesn't hold anything back with me, and it's great. I love it.
Do you have a story you like to tell about Phil's gambling? Like when people ask you about it, what's your best go-to Phil gambling story out there on the course?
Man, there's so many. It's just, I mean, one of my favorites, like, me and him got paired together the weekend of the PGA this year, and we played both days together. I guess people don't realize what goes on in between the ropes, but I mean, they're still trash talking between me and him even when we're playing out there. But I remember on the first hole Sunday at Baltusrol, he hit it in the right greenside bunker, just dead short sided. I mean, no chance to get within 15 feet, and he took this massive swing and hit it to a foot. And he was kind of walking up and tapping in. I was like, that's pretty good. He goes, yeah, I made that way easier. I made that look way easier than it was, didn't I? Just kind of just little chirping things like that. But the gambling stuff, man, obviously you can't play for an amount that's going to scare him. He intimidates me more than I can intimidate him. But, you know, we've go back and forth a lot. It's a lot of fun.
Is there anybody out there on tour who's a sneaky gambler that people wouldn't guess?
Oh, I mean, there's quite a few. Brooks Koepka likes to gamble. Matt Every. There's a lot of us. Pretty much anybody I play a practice round with likes to gamble.
When you guys are out there playing, is it pretty much kind of a standard game, or is it really depend on who you're playing with?
It depends on the group. Obviously, the stakes are a lot higher with Phil. But you know, I play a lot with, you know, Graham Dillette and Kevin Kisner and Duff and those guys. I mean, we get good games. It's a lot of fun. I hate Tuesday practice rounds unless I have a game. It's just Tuesday's one of my favorite days of the week, just because you can trash talk and go at it, and there's always some action going on.
That's the vibe we've gotten from a lot of the people we've interviewed, is they don't like the Tuesday rounds unless there's a little bit of that juice going.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, well, if you've been out there for a while, like some of us have, I mean, you've played the courses so many times. I mean, there's only so much more you can learn from a practice round. So if you're going to go out there and play, see how the course is going, you might as well have some action. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. I look forward to those days.
You know what? Fuck the tournaments. Let's just do Tuesday practice round games every week. We'll just determine the points by that.
If we could get a cart and music and beer, I'd win every week, I think.
Just be number one in FedEx, no problem.
Yeah, I love it. That's my go-to.
All right, so we got the Walker Cup coming up in September. It's kind of an event that, you know, it gets brought up here and there, but I feel like a lot of our listeners might not know a ton about it, or it doesn't get maybe necessarily the coverage that it deserves. In 2007, you were part of a winning Walker Cup team. Talk a little bit about kind of what the Walker Cup is, what it means to you at the time, all that type of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's such a cool event. It's, you know, pretty much the amateur version of the Ryder Cup. And it's pretty much the highest – I mean, being selected for that team is about as high as honors you can get in amateur golf. And, I mean, people know, like, our team was just stacked. We have 8 out of the 10 guys on the team are on the PGA Tour right now, and just such a cool experience. We played over in Ireland at Royal County Down, and we're actually one of the few American teams that's ever won over there. And it was just such a cool experience. Probably the most nervous I've ever been in golf.
That's awesome.
Playing that. But it was – you know, I played with Dustin both days, an alternate shot. And it's pretty cool to play with him and play from his tee shots.
Yeah,
pretty
no
enjoyable.
Shit. Yeah, we get it's funny. Every podcast, I feel like Dustin Johnson comes up. Somebody's got a DJ story. Yeah. He just seems like the greatest dude in the world, pretty much.
Oh, he's so awesome. He is just so chill and laid back. And, you know, he's never changed with all his success and everything. He's still just that same guy, likes to, you know, have a good time. And but he's obviously very dedicated to what he does. And there's no surprise he's the best in the world.
Yeah, we even had Danielle Kang on last week, and she was like, DJ was giving me sage advice at night, texting me how to win golf tournaments.
She obviously listened. Killed it there last week.
Yeah. So then, you know, after you win the U.S. Amateur, you decide to turn pro. You forfeited your spot in the Masters, in the U.S. Open. What was that decision like? Because I feel like a lot of guys hold on to that so they can get into those events.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, tough decision, but I mean, for me, you know, I talked to a lot of people. Actually, that's my first really interaction was with Phil. I talked to him before I made the decision. And, you know, he was one of the few that told me to turn pro and get started. For me, it was just, you know, my mom supported me my whole, you know, college amateur career. And it was time for me to kind of return the favor. And, you know, I got offered a lot of financial opportunities. And, you know, my stock was pretty much the highest it was going to be. I was the number one amateur in the world at the time. And I just thought it was time to go, and I could help my family out and help myself out a lot. And, you know, I'm playing this game for a career, not just one tournament. And I felt very confident I'd get back to the Masters. Even though I haven't yet, I still think I will. And, you know, I don't regret the decision at all. I'm very happy. It's my seventh year on the PGA Tour, and I'm having the time of my life.
You got to get paid, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Money helps things out.
I'm a little surprised that Phil gave you the advice to turn pro, because he stayed an amateur forever, basically.
Yeah. You know, he told me, he's like, look, it's your time now. He goes, you're going to get back to the Masters. He goes, you have a lot of opportunities right now. He goes, I recommend you turn pro and go get it.
We had kind of a huge debate in the office today. It's been a weird day, and it basically stemmed from, I don't know if you've seen these, but there's viral videos of people running over other people on the golf course after they hit shots.
Yes, I have.
First off, your thoughts on these videos and this move in general?
Well, I don't understand it at all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It hurts like hell. Yeah. So we were actually, Jeff Quinney was talking about that. He's like, have you seen these people running each other over in the golf carts? I don't understand it. Like someone's going to kill someone one day.
Like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, what's the fun in that? And who's the first asshole that did it?
Right. So we had the debate in the office today. Trent and I basically were like, you know, we can't post them. The powers that be above us were like, it's all about numbers. We got to post these. Everybody's reacting to them. They're doing really well on social media. Now it's evolved to the point where I, your humble host, I have a bounty on my head, $1,000 bounty.
Uh-huh.
If somebody runs me over on the course. Yep. So I don't know really what to do. I mean, what would you do if you're in my shoes? I'm thinking about carrying a gun.
You might not want to play golf for a while and hope this just passes over and goes away.
It's kind of thing. Like, I'm trying to act a little tough. I'm legitimately afraid for my health to go on the golf course.
Yeah, I would be too. At least don't announce where you're playing golf.
I'm going to try to, like, mislead people. I'm going to send them to the wrong city.
Yeah, that's a good play.
Somebody was saying they've got that new Snapchat thing where it can locate where you are.
Yeah.
Somebody's saying you got to turn that off, otherwise you're going to have people all over you.
Yeah, my buddy tweeted today. He goes, if one of you assholes runs me over in a golf cart, you better hope you kill me, because I'm going to come up swinging with whatever club I have in my hand.
Exactly. That's 100% how I feel. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, so we got a couple rapid fires.
Okay.
First one, what is your go-to curse word when you hit a bad shot?
Fuck.
All right, that's pretty standard. A lot of people go with that one. It's tried and true.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard.
I came over the rapid fire when you were talking about you've obviously had a lot of time off. Did you have anything that you became involved in, or that, like, a new hobby since you couldn't play golf for so long?
I tried playing tennis a little bit, but I'm way too fat and slow for that.
I was trying
to get some exercise.
I didn't want to say anything, but I wish I could see video of Colt Knost playing tennis. That'd be great.
I didn't move very fast. I played with this girl here that used to play professional tennis, and she's made fun of me the whole time. And I was like, well, let's go out on the golf course and see how you fucking look at this.
You didn't know no video games or anything like that? iPhone games?
No, I'm not a big video game person. One day I was bored, and I went and bought a PlayStation a few years ago and played it, I think, three times, and then gave it to my friend for $100.
Yeah, that was the big Tiger Woods move. Whenever he's hurt, he's like, he becomes the best COD player on the planet for like a year.
I get real bored. Well, I watch a lot of sports and stuff, so I mean, it kind of just passed my time.
Maybe you gotta pick up squash. That way, you just kind of stand in the middle and just send the ball over the court. You don't really have to move too much.
Nah, I don't like playing things I'm not good at. I better just stick to golf.
What are your go-to snacks? You got any snack recommendations for people out on the course?
Out on the course? I mean, I normally just keep it pretty simple with a Clif Bar or peanut butter and jelly.
Ooh, PB&J?
Those are always good. Yeah, it's hard to beat that.
Are you a superstitious golfer at all?
Not really. I have been one time in my life. I remember at Hilton Head a few years ago when I had the lead all week. Me and John Malinger and Charlie Hoffman had dinner together every night. Wednesday night, we went to Carrabba's and I had the lead. We went back Thursday night, still had the lead. Went back Friday night, still had the lead. And then Saturday, the assholes wouldn't go with me. Yeah, so I got it to go, and I finished third.
Oh, no.
Basically, it's their fault. Yeah.
That's totally on them. They owe you some money, I think.
That's typical Charlie. He's an asshole.
That's probably my favorite question we ask people or ask golfers, because they say no, and you said not really, and then as soon as they start going, we find out they're pretty superstitious.
But mine's just like that random thing. Like, I mean, if I get it going pretty good, I guess, during a week, if I notice I've done something, I'll keep doing it, but I don't have one, like, consistent superstition that I do.
Yeah, because we asked Jim Herman, and he's like, no, I'm not superstitious at all. And then he's like, but I have, like, a different presidential coin for each tournament that I keep the right side up, depending on how I'm playing. We're like, buddy, you're pretty superstitious.
Yeah. I have this buddy that plays, like, mini tour stuff around here that he has three coins in his pocket, one for birdie, one for par, and one for bogey. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude, are you serious?
And then he'll just claim he wasn't superstitious.
Yeah. Exactly.
How about this? And that might be your answer right there. What's the most superstitious thing you've seen on tour that a guy does?
That's definitely up there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't notice a lot of things like that. But the coin thing was unreal to me.
Yeah. We had Danielle Kang last week, and she was saying that her superstition when she won the LPGA championship was that she had to go down and get a new hotel room key every night.
Oh, see that worked for her during the week, so she kept doing it. I understand that.
Yeah, right. She was just dumb and fucked up and kept losing her key, and so she had to get a new key, and then, like, Friday and Saturday night, she just kept doing the same thing.
Yeah, keep doing it.
So, yeah, you are like with that. Selective superstition. That's what you would call yourself.
Yeah, exactly. If I notice something, if I did something like Wednesday night or Thursday morning and it worked, I'll keep doing it.
That's not superstition.
I'm not
just smart.
I'm not scared. Yeah, I'm not scared to eat the same thing all week long. It's working.
All right, so now, you know, you're back. You had the surgery. You're recovering. What can we expect from Colt Knost the rest of the way?
I think I'm going to play a web event in Boise in September and then get started at Napa. But, you know, I'm excited. I've made some changes. I've picked up some distance, and I'm ready to get back out there, man. It's, you know, last year was so much fun. I got in the mix a few times and had the best year of my career, and then for this to happen was very unfortunate, but at the same time, I think it was kind of a blessing because it made me realize how good we have it out there, and, you know, I'm ready to get out there and win.
Do you have any specific goals for next year?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have 23 events or 24 events to make my money. I mean, first job is obviously to do what I need to do to keep my job, but, you know, my goal is to win. It's never going to change. I know I can, and I think I'm just now reaching the peak of my career, and like I said, I'm ready to get going.
All right, man. Well, we really appreciate you sitting down with us. We're glad you're healthy, and we'll be rooting for you out there.
That was very tame for y'all. I'm surprised. I thought it'd be a little dicier.
We had a weird day, you know. We're kind of messed up today. We've been attacked ruthlessly by our bosses. We're a little fucked up today.
All right, I understand it. I'll give you a pass. We'll do it again some other time.
Absolutely, man. We'll have to have you back on, but yeah, we really appreciate the time, and we're glad you're back.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
All right, Cole. Thanks a lot, man. All right, next up, we've got everybody's favorite segment from the gallery, from the patrons out there.
FTG.
FTG. That's what we call it in our little notes. No big deal. A little behind the curtain there. Email us, foreplay@barstoolsports.com. Send us your shit. Send us your stories. Send us your issues that you and your boys or gals, for all the female patrons out there, have. We love getting them. We love reading them. Not all of them make the show, but we like reading them anyways. We like knowing people are into some weird, quirky-ass shit like we are out there on the golf course. How much do you love reading those, Sunshine?
It's a blast.
It's your favorite part of your week?
Yeah, it makes me smile every day.
We never can have enough of them. Send them, send them, send them. Keep Sunshine busy. All right, first up, we got Jake. This is a classic. This is a question that's become a little more prevalent the last couple of years. Thoughts on music during the round, whether it's you or someone you're paired with? Trent?
Big fan. A couple reasons.
Okay.
One, it gives a casual atmosphere to golfing, because as opposed to quiet is just, it's off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. Silence has always been off-putting, and there's a lot of silence on the golf course, so to have some tunes going makes me feel much more comfortable. And second, most importantly, as stupid as it sounds, if you play the right song, I feel like I'm getting in a rhythm. I feel like if you play the right thing, even if it's not a song that I love, if I hear it and I feel like I'm getting in a rhythm and it puts me in a good mood, I think it improves my play. Whether or not that's true, I'm not really sure. But I'm a big fan of music on the golf course. Riggs?
Yeah, if you have a problem with music on the golf course, you're on the wrong side. You're going to be on the wrong side of history,
mm-hmm.
and you're just kind of on the wrong side of humanity, basically. You're just the person that sucks, and you need to embrace reality, realize that music makes pretty much everything better.
Everything.
Now, don't get me wrong. If you're at like some private club and it's got that type of vibe, then you don't want to be disrupting the whole course and affecting other people's game, because everybody has their own music preferences and all of that. However, music on the course, and I think it was Keegan Bradley even who said this on his Faraday show, it's almost like a white noise effect during golf, where as long as you've got a consistent noise, like even Happy Gilmore, when he gets the whole crowd going when he's teeing off, that's fine. It's when you get like a click or something in your backswing that fucks with you.
Right.
But just music in general, because like you said, it's got the rhythm to it, it's consistent. That's fine. It's not startling. It's just a song. You know what to expect. You're kind of bumping. I also agree with the theory that I didn't really think about this, that, you know, after you hit a shitty shot or something, hear a little music,
yeah,
you're not as upset.
I will say this. There's nothing worse than you're about to tee off and you know the end of a song is coming.
Yeah.
So you just have to wait.
Or when you're the guy in the group, like the other three guys tee off, and then you get the commercial and the guy's playing like Pandora.
Yeah,
and he doesn't shell out for the account.
Yes.
The free account, or the account that comes out commercials.
Yeah.
And you get like the fucking commercial. You're like, oh, the Geico commercial.
You got to wait. At that point, you just got to wait.
Yeah, you can't be the guy, because then it's in your head. You're like, do I hit? Am I the moron that couldn't mentally back off the shot that hit during the commercial, that hit a shitty shot?
You saying music makes everything better is true, and it reminds me of a thing that my friend Caleb Presley once told me. It was a fellow Barstool worker, where compare it to when you're walking down the street, if you live in a big city, walking down the street without headphones, and when you're walking down the street with headphones. Caleb once said that walking down the street with headphones playing music is the best you'll ever feel in your life. And it's true. Because having music and you're walking down the street, it feels like you're the king of the world.
You are the most confident person in the world.
Yes.
You feel like you're the star billionaire in like the movie The Social Network.
Yeah.
Where you're like, the whole world's focused on me. There's all this dramatic energy, and I'm the leader of it all, and I'm dominating life. That's how you feel. And you got like just you and your thoughts and the music and the city.
I was listening to Lil Wayne. I actually often listen to Lil Wayne when I'm walking to the office. I just feel like I'm on top of the goddamn world.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're in a music video.
So then bring that to the golf course. Boom. You're in great shape. Again, I think you should be aware enough to maybe turn it down when you approach other tee boxes and stuff.
Yeah, everything.
So as not to be the annoying guys that are like throwing the huge house party and fucking
up
the whole neighborhood.
This all comes with, you know, specific situations where you don't want to be bumping music. Like,
right.
You have to be smart. It's all about common sense.
But also, if you're just on a normal public track and you're like three holes over and you get so rattled by a couple guys in another group playing music, you are a mental midget and the music is not your problem, my friend. You are the problem.
Boom. Roasted.
Boom. Roasted. Next one, we got Bob. Bob says, a little embrace debate. Could a four-man scramble of regular guys, he says, let's say 8 to 10-ish handicaps, make the cut, contend, or win a regular tournament on the PGA Tour?
What do you think?
I think they can make the cut. Not consistently. I think they could make the cut. I do not think that they could win. Now, if they were like on tour for the whole year or something, which is a really funny thought.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
If the PGA Tour wants to do something different, do this.
This is actually a pretty funny idea. Like, these guys like on tour.
team formats are very fun. Obviously, they're interesting. The Zurich Classic was very fun. Now, let's take it to a whole other level. Let's just have a bunch of regular guys with a scramble team every single week.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, so we can kind of spin this into a little talk about yesterday. We played Glen Oaks
mm-hmm.
over on Long Island, which is where we're having the Northern Trust, formerly known as the Barclays FedEx Cup event in August. I think it's FedEx Cup event, isn't it?
I believe it is.
They're having that at the end of next month. Mm-hmm. And so we play Glen Oaks, and we get out there, and we didn't play the tips. Tee it forward. We're not assholes. But we did go on most holes. We drove back to the back tee box. And, I mean, this is kind of a tree line course. The places that these guys are teeing off from are preposterous.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And so it's kind of starting to make me think now. I mean, it depends on – obviously, everything depends on the course. But these guys, it would be a grind, I think, for them on a one-off to make the cut. I think if you let them play on tour the whole year – they played like a full schedule.
I need that to happen now. I think
they could figure it out. And the reason that I say like, maybe they could make the cut but they could never win is like having never had the nerves and all of that. Like these guys would be nervous as fuck. They're teeing off in front of thousands of people. They're on TV. They're playing for a bunch of money. No chance they could hold it together.
We played Glen Oaks yesterday.
Yeah.
And they're playing the tournament, like you said, in a month. And some of the grandstands are already set up. Mm-hmm. I get nervous looking at the grandstands.
Right.
There's nobody in them.
Right.
Can you imagine, Sunshine's laughing at me, that's true though, can you imagine being out there when there's full galleries?
And imagine the media circus around this scramble foursome that got into the event, that like Monday qualified for the PGA Tour event. There'd be a media circus around them. They'd be nervous. I don't care who you are. You have to factor those things in. They would just, like, they make one or two doubles, which is very, very easy to do at some of these tour courses. I get how scramble works. I know it's four guys. You start, like, on the first tee, if the first two guys hit bad drives, your team's going, oh, fuck. Next thing you know, you start with, like, a bogey or something as a scramble. So I think it would be way tougher than people think in a one-off situation. I think if they got the groove going and they played a full tour schedule, they could start to get a lot more legit. But I think a one-off would be really tough.
I think that needs to be a movie. A scramble team being on the PGA Tour.
That is such a good idea.
Maybe a Will Ferrell, he makes all those Talladega Nights semi-pro movies. Him doing a golf one with like
They should do a 72-hole qualifier where the one team that wins this gets a spot in a PGA Tour event.
Yes.
And that scramble crew, they'd play as professional. Oh, no, let's say they play as amateurs. So that you're not affecting the prize pool or any of that.
Yes.
And they play in the tournament, like, in a group. It's like Spieth, Rory, and this scramble team.
Yeah.
Like they got, like, the 8:30 tee time on Thursday. I think that would be awesome.
Can you imagine the headlines that would get? Like, just four just fucking nobodies out there.
We got Jim from finance. We got Tony from sales, like, fucking out here in the scramble.
And if you really want to do it, you make it into a reality show where you – have a bunch of scramble teams that you pair down, like you're saying, a qualifier.
Yep.
And then you just follow these dudes around.
And then what do they do? You think they come out in like uniforms? Didn't they like acquire these sponsors? They play the same ball. What do you do with the ball? You got to play like the same Pro V.
This is all just part of it. I think you definitely dress as a team.
Yeah.
You definitely wear uniforms. And you all do the same shit.
Yeah.
God, that would be good.
Last one. We got our guy, John. He said he golfs once a week, year round, with the same three guys. He's a military guy. His three guys that he always golfed with got deployed. Shout out to the troops, first of all. Love the troops. Love the troop golfers. Also, a little acknowledgement to Uncle Chaps.
Shout out to Chaps, who, a little bit more about Chaps, his golfer now is Matt Kuchar for two reasons. One, his caddy looks just like Uncle Chaps. I don't know if you saw that.
Exactly.
So, like on Wednesday or Thursday, Chaps said, whoever finishes second at the Open Championship, that's going to be my golfer.
Yep.
And then the next day, he saw Matt Kuchar's caddy, who looks just like Chaps. So he picked Matt Kuchar, and then, as fate would have it, Matt Kuchar finished second anyway.
So
it would have been Kuchar regardless.
That's just the match made in heaven, that Kuch is Chaps' favorite golfer, whose caddy looks exactly like Chaps.
And it's a very dad pick, and Chaps is a dad.
Totally.
Shout out to Podfather.
Maybe the only more dad pick on tour is Jim Furyk.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Maybe the only one.
Yep.
Kuch is Mr. Dad. And Chaps is obsessed with golf, so he's going to like this one. But the guy's question is, what does he do? Does he just play alone, or does he try to find three new friends? He's got till December, till these guys come back. I think you got to find friends. I think you got to find three new dudes, convince them to get into golf, whatever you got to do. Maybe come up with some plan to trick them into playing golf once, make sure they have a good time, teach them the shotgun mulligan, something like that, so that when they're out there, they're like, this is fucking awesome. All you got to do to get somebody to fall in love with golf, find a way to make sure on one par three that they hit like a really good shot,
yeah.
One really good shot. Those guys will play with you every Saturday.
Yeah, or you get them to hit a nice 3-wood in the middle of the fairway,
yes.
Have that connect. then they're addicted forever.
Yes, like pure one that you kind of feel that sweet spot.
Yep.
Then they'll keep coming back.
Part of me thinks I would have this guy just play alone until December because, and he kind of mentioned it in the email, it's going to be weird when you get back, when those guys get back, and you're like, all right, and now I'm going to go, you got to pick between your new friends or your old friends.
Yeah, that is tough, but I don't know if I'm willing to go, you know, whatever, 5 months.
True.
Playing by myself all the time.
No, you're right. Yeah, you got to get three more and you get more people involved. And then you start to have a golf crew.
Don't get me wrong. Every now and then it's fun. It's nice to golf by yourself. It's therapeutic. But I think by like the third or fourth week, you're like, all right, like I'm fucking walking around by myself.
And you're running the risk of getting a hole in one for 5 months when nobody's going to know.
Right. You're playing every par three you play. You're hoping you don't get a hole in one.
That sucks. That's the determining factor right there for me. I don't want that stress in my life.
So yesterday at Glen Oaks, we played the last four holes as a ninesome. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them were par threes. One of them, like a very inviting, like 150-yard par three. And everyone was like, this is the perfect time to get a hole in one.
Oh, yeah.
People would have been diving into the pond. I mean,
it would have been chaos.
I have this weird mindset where I stood over it and was like, this is it.
I think everyone stands over a par three and thinks this is it.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if, like, I feel like every time I step up to a par three, I also think this is it. This is the one.
I stood
it
up.
It never is.
But. And then I think, can't wait to tell everyone that I thought that this was it when I made it.
And we were also in a situation where, that's true, where there were, like, people had cameras out, they were taking, like, Insta stories. Can you imagine an Insta story where you get a hole in one? I mean, that's as good as it gets, folks.
Oh, that would be unbelievable. But then nobody would believe it. Because you can't, like, on an Insta story, there's no way you could see the ball go in the hole.
Oh, yeah, you're
so
right.
So that's another one of those where you're like, everyone's like, oh, terrible acting. You're like, no, I fucking got a hole in one, dude.
God, hole in ones are so stressful.
Yeah.
I think about it.
I'm almost happy I've never gotten one. You just don't want to deal with the hoopla.
I don't feel that way, but I know what you're saying.
This week, we've got the Canadian Open. I always kind of remember it as when Jason Day won a couple years ago. Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he had barely lost the Open, he was devastated, and then he made that putt on the 72nd hole of the Canadian Open. I did see something funny where I think that they were giving away. So they were giving – the tournament was giving all of the Canadian players – like BMWs, and they were giving all the non-Canadian players like Chrysler 300s.
Really? Come on. That's bullshit.
Which I thought was kind of a power move from Canada.
That is funny. But
yeah, you got to like when Canada slips their little wins in there.
They like think they're like, yeah, we're tough.
Yeah, that's fine.
But that's adorable.
Yeah, America's top hat. Like,
so
good
cute
for you guys. You can, yeah, give your guys the cooler car. That's fine. Oh, and then I saw somebody, they were saying they're giving them like the parking spots too. And somebody was like, well, good thing all those parking spots will be open for the weekend.
Oh.
Boom. Roasted.
Boom. Roasted.
And on that note, I think that's it for the week. Anybody got anything else?
No. Nope. Good week. Awesome Open Championship. We only got one major left.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, I did kind of feel sad today.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, we're severely on the downslope for, you know.
Very much
like
so.
Like, it's pretty much over.
And nothing against the PGA Championship, but it's like.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've got Prez Cup and, like, FedEx Cup, and we're going to do all kinds of hoopla, and we're going to get excited for those. But, I mean, we're on the way down for the year. Like, we're almost at the bottom.
They did. There was an interesting note what I was reading today. In the next three majors, we have the chance to root for career Grand Slams. So we've got Spieth at the PGA. We've got Rory at the Masters. And then Phil at the U.S. Open.
Wow. So that's exciting.
It's a fun thing to root for. Career Grand Slams are cool.
I can't wait to root for that at the Masters in fucking 10 months or whatever.
All right, it is far away, but.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Hit it hard.
Hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it.
People would have given up by now. All the rough I've seen, these ups and downs. Somehow I just keep on playing through. So all you critics, pull up a chair. At the winner's circle soon, I'll be there. With a high five and a smile for you. Hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding. I hit it long, man, long. Till it's gone, man, long. people trying to tell me how to live my life. These lawyers and strings spending money like my ex-wives. Sure, I gamble and I drink and smoke 3 packs a day. Hell, ain't country music supposed to be this way? It's from the heart, man. I hit it hard, man. So far, man. No laying up, no holding back. Ain't afraid of nothing, it's a natural fact. I hit it long, man. Till it's gone, man. Keep taking chances, living large. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I hit it, I hit it, I hit it hard. I hit it hard, man. Keep hitting it hard, man. How about you?